like, what if all my painters quit? What am I going to do? And it happened. There was like a day where it happened multiple times where I lost like key guys that were part of my crews. One guy tried to create a union of painters against me and had to basically like let him go and restart with that crew. And you know what? It was actually the best thing that ever happened. You don't really know like when the good days are and when the bad days are, because what happened was I hired a new crew and they were so much easier to work with. My life got way easier.
Welcome to the Edge of Excellence podcast. This show is for current and aspiring leaders that are dedicated to showing up every day in their lives with excellence. We break down the careers of those excelling so you can understand what is out there and how to rise up in every field you choose. Let's get the show on the road, shall we? Your host has spent his life promoting global entrepreneurship, helping 20-somethings find their passion, and working to help others achieve excellence. CEO of College Works, Matt Stewart.
Welcome to the show. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for listening. We've got a great show. We've got Corey Finley, VP of Great Plains for College Works, all those states. He's going to talk about ownership and focusing on attitude and action around what you control. He's going to talk about looking for life's lessons and mentors. And he's had a lot of mentors and a lot of lessons. And he finds them in strange places like the cattle business. And we're going to get into pushing even when you're doing well. Thought I was going to say when you're doing bad, but even when you're doing well, because he is the top of the top. Welcome to the show and welcome to the Edge of Excellence. Corey Finley, thank you so much for walking away from all those heads of cattle, ceasing and assisting in wedding planning, shutting down the workday for an hour to come share your wisdom and your personality and your smile on the Edge of Excellence. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Matt. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, Corey. Well, before we go way back and dig into being a three-sport athlete and then breaking every record at in your professional career and having a pretty large and successful investment portfolio at a young age, Corey, I got to know, what is your definition of excellence?
I'd say my definition of excellence would be the habit of putting in the best effort and wanting to be the best every day. Doesn't matter like how you're feeling or what's going on, you got to put in your best effort every day and want to do it at the best you can.
Every single day. Okay, I like that. And I was telling my friend Lisa, who called me like locked today, because she's worried about her podcast. That's talking to me about the best. She's worried about the podcast. And she said, why? You haven't called me for 4 years. Why is that? I said, because you're so nervous about it. And she's like prepping. She's listened to like 10 of the podcasts. I guess she's putting in her best effort every day. And so you're putting in your best effort with your beautiful fiance to be the best fiance you can be. And by the way, she told me you came back from OC and you ratted me out. And you're like, hey, I realize what I've been doing wrong. And she's like, yeah, Corey told me what he said. I was telling Corey what I've been doing wrong. I know. He saw what you were doing and decided to do it a different way. So you're being the best fiance you could be. You're being the best partner you could be in business. You're being the best supervisor, boss. I hate to be called the boss, that you could be. You're being the best cattle rancher you could be. And every day, whether your dog floods your house or your dog floods your house again, or it's negative 75 degrees, or somebody peed in your Cheerios, you're going to be the best and put in the best effort no matter what. How do you do that? How do you do that when you're, and I'm just thinking about the people listening, they're in their 20s. Sometimes they get, I do that stress management thing with them and they rank everything as so stressful. How do you constantly, no matter what happens, work to be the best every day? What motivates you to do that?
Well, I always take it as like, it's going to be my fault. It's like my responsibility to make sure that, you know, if something's not going right, then like I need to do stuff and take care of it. Right. Like the wedding planning wasn't going, or, you know, Bryce is upset at me about the wedding planning. I take a step back and I realize, well, it's because I'm not involved enough. I need to like take care of that part of my life and like make time to sit down for an hour each week to go through and look for and like help her make decisions. You know, Or, you know, college works, if things weren't going the way I wanted in my business, I had to take a step back, look at it and be like, okay, what am I doing wrong? So I think it's like just taking a lot of responsibility for like what's going on in your life. And you just can't blame others or expect others to fix it for you.
Okay, so that helps. And by the way, I was just talking to your friend, Brett. He said the same thing. I said the same thing. You're taking ownership. Every bad thing, what can you do to make it better? Every bad interaction, every bad relationship, what part of it is me? So that's one step. You're taking ownership. When you're feeling a bad mood, your dog just flooded your house, it's freezing cold outside, all the mistakes are your fault. That sounds worse. So, and you still got to be your best. So what's the next step after you take ownership from things that are going wrong? You're looking for the lessons. I know that. So yeah, for me, there's like a positivity because I'm going to grow from it. But what else are you doing to be the best every day, no matter how hard?
Well, I mean, like, you know, it sounds like when you put it like that, it sounds like it sucks when you have to take responsibility for everything.
It does suck. And that's the worst thing, especially when you're married. It's never their fault. You want it to be their fault, but it never is. It's always on you. It's your reaction. It's what you bring to the table. It takes two to tango. It takes one to end the fight.
Well, when you take responsibility for it and then you take action and you want to take action, you know, instantly, don't wait. Don't sit around. Then it becomes in your control again. And then once you take control of it, then things get better versus just like delaying, waiting. It's always on the back of your mind. You know, you got to do what you have to now. So you do what you want to do later.
We're going to get into building a cattle business. We're going to get into changing lives for a living. We're going to get into marrying the love of your life. But before we do, we got to go way back and figure out what was Corey like in high school in Colby, Kansas, which I believe is a town of 4,000 people, 3 hours away from the Denver airport and 5 hours away from Kansas City. Smack dab in the middle of the plains. What was life like? How did you see yourself? What were you doing? How did you find your path? And I know you were like buying cattle and investing and doing crazy stuff. What was going on? Were you already on the edge of excellence back then?
Well, I'd say like what happened was, so I was from a family of eight. So, and I was like the seventh child. And in order for like my parents to like manage us, they made us either work a job or do a sport. And they preferred that we just do a sport so that way we make it fun, not always be working. But it was sometime like in middle school, I did not want to do swim club again for the summer. And in order to do that, I had to have a summer job.
In middle school.
Yeah. It was in middle school. Yeah. So, because like,
when, you know, when it's illegal to have a job.
Yeah. Well, it was just pretty much cash underneath the table. And I was pouring concrete. So,
it made that illegal. You're pouring concrete on a construction site at 13 years old.
14, 15. And that was so that way I could get out doing swim club. But to be honest, like I still had to do swim club because my brothers did it till they were 15 and got jobs. So I had to do the job and swim club. I had to do both that summer. I guess like when I worked for that guy, he taught me like the art of being like perfect. Because he was like known as like the best of his craft in all of like Western Kansas. That's what every customer said. And I wanted to be like that. Like I wanted to be known as like the best at what I do. And I guess like what happened was, you know, I was young, made quite a bit of money that summer. And I wanted to put it somewhere rather than just waste it all. And so I bought cattle with my brother. And from there, like I wanted it to be like the best cattle operation when I started that. And the first year we started off just like 10 head, and then we grew it to 30, and then the 60, and then we got it over like 100 by the time I was in like high school. I remember like in junior year of high school, I bought like my first property to go with it. So like I was wanting to grow it to be the best operation you can get. And then like same thing with like sports and athletics. You know, I wasn't necessarily good at wrestling at the start. I was JV my freshman year, sophomore year, you know, 50-50 season. And then like junior, senior year, that's where it finally like took off and ended up becoming like second at state. which still haunts me this day. And then, you know, football, I mean, I was like, yeah, they put me on the line. And if you look at me, I'm not a guy that looks like a lineman, but, you know, I went all the way to being all league lineman for our school. So, or for our leagues. But yeah, so that's like how I was in like high school, in middle school, I guess, too.
What was the other sport? I know you did three.
Oh, track. That was like a buffer sport for me. I mean, I like doing it. I was very competitive in it, but.
Did you know that I was a lineman too?
Really?
145 pounds. So I look like a lineman now, but at the time I sure didn't look like a lineman.
What position? Or like, was it like offensive, defensive?
Offensive. Tight end.
Tight end. Okay.
Yeah. Is that crazy? And I was up against like 300 pound people. I would get flushed. Just flushed. I have all these memories of rural New Mexico, just looking at these people that were humongous. And I was 145 pounds. So you're second in state wrestling, all league football, track just to keep yourself in shape, trying to be the best at what you're doing. You did the cattle, tried to be the best, bought properties as a junior in high school, trying to be the best. We'll get into college in a second. But you were already on the edge of excellence at 14 years old. You're not doing either or, you're doing both. I want the job to get out of swimming. Okay, I'll do swimming too. I want the job, but what am I going to do with the money? Just constantly growing, learning, challenging yourself. You were already there at an early age. Unlike some of my my guess, I had one person on recently. I didn't know he dropped out of high school. Holy moly, now he runs a $2 billion business. So some people are on the edge right now and they need to get there. Some people were already there, but you also just are finding mentors in interesting places. Your boss, you're noticing what the good parts of them are. So it's back to that kind of ownership that you were talking about before. What do you control? And taking action. You're noticing and you're seeing things and you're taking ownership of these relationships and ownership of the experience and ownership of the vision. And what you take out of that is, I want to be the best at what I do. And you've told me many times, you've never had a customer complaint. I know you had your first customer complaint in your whole section of the company, but you personally never had a customer complaint. And you set the record for the most produced at CollegeWorks as an intern. You didn't have any customer complaints. The first time you ran with the team, you had to wait till your second year, and I don't know how many millions of dollars that is, before any one customer had anything to say. And you were so pissed because you want to be the best. You want to be like that concrete guy. You want to be known for being the best, and you're not going to tolerate anything but. And that's part of being excellent, right?
Yep, exactly. Yeah, I remember like the day it finally happened, getting the first upset customer, first client complaint. Basically you just look back at it. It's like, you know where you made the mistake, you know, like how to make sure it doesn't happen again. But
and you make sure that the people that were accountable to that know where they're not in trouble, but they need to know where they made the mistake. They need to know how to make it not happen again. They need to solve the problem and not run from the problem. And then I saw what you did. You came to the rest of the company, you're like, hey, I've never had a complaint before. Here's what I did. And then you teach everybody else. Because you're that excellence thing, you're bringing everybody else up with you to be excellent with you. You're lifting as you go. And I don't know if I've told you this before. Very few entrepreneurs I know squash people. You see them on TV and you hear about them in the news. But most of them are looking to lift this thing. And there are some that succeed not that way. It can be done. But for the most part, it's the tide that floats all boats. The tide that floats all boats. So you're in middle school. You're crushing it. You're in high school. You're this athlete. You're this good looking person. You got this great girlfriend. You're crushing it. You're making some money at your jobs, and then you're crushing it with that money, buying cattle, buying land. I don't know. You can't even buy cattle and land. You can't be. How many rules are they breaking there? You can work when you're 14. You can get into a contract when you're 17. Crazy. And then you go to college and you went to the College of Varsity Donuts. And they actually built this entire university around this donut truck in Manhattan, Kansas. And they've got these great donuts. They've got these great corn dogs. And everybody loved it so much, they built an entire university around it. So you go out to check out the donuts, check out the corn dogs, and end up enrolling in college. And what was life like in college? How did you see yourself? How were you separating yourself? What were those lessons?
Well, yeah, I remember like my expectation of college, when you go there, you're going to be with like the best people. And like, you know, the business school is going to have these like, you know, prestigious students. And then my freshman year, first semester, I have like a group project. And I realized like not everybody's close to that. I realized like they are very mediocre. They're being kind of mediocre. And I guess like I wanted to kind of just stand out from them. I didn't want to be like the rest of them. Or you know, kind of people were there. They're just kind of like wandering through, didn't really know like what they wanted to do, or any didn't really seem like they had any like aspiration. So I guess that's like kind of like what led me to like College Works, you know, listening to like hearing Conrad talk about it. And then like friends talk about it too. So
and it's interesting that you say that. What I hear mostly is I was hot shit. I was valedictorian. I was varsity this, all state that. And I came to college and I realized everybody else had that. And that's true because you have to get into college and not everybody goes to college and not everybody goes to the same college. That's true. But my friend Greg says the same thing. He went to Kellogg Business School and he showed up and he's like, wait a second. I thought all these people would be just kicking my ass and I'm kicking their ass. And he had a confidence boost. So what I normally hear is, oh man, I'm not as great as I thought I was. And then people have to deal with that and change and become as great as they thought they were. What I hear from you and Greg is, I got there like, holy shit, I'm going to crush all these people. What's next?
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty much how I felt. Yeah.
And so you found College Works as a freshman. You did the most revenue anybody had ever done. And you were a freshman, which I got to say this. I used to always say, don't hire any freshmen. And, you know, we had these metrics and stuff and, you know, we can't hire freshmen. It's too soon. I couldn't have done this as a freshman. You need to have worked a lot. You need to, and freshmen was fresh. And by the way, they're all first year. I mean, you beat out the second year people, you beat out the third year people. And then the next year probably was a freshman. And I know this year was a freshman. So you break the record, that stood for kind of a long time. You made like 80 grand. You were intern of the year. You were safety intern. You were quality. You didn't have a customer complaint for hundreds of thousands of dollars after that. And then you move into the DM role and do really well there. And eventually you're in your role. What were the big lessons as you, and it applies to, you're in Alaska right now, you don't have college. If you're in California, we don't have college. If you're in the Midwest, you got to get hired at college. So let's say that, you know, people aren't doing it. What got you to fast, moving forward, growing? What kept opening doors? What were you doing to open doors and succeed?
Well, I think like College Works, you know, like when you said, like, I went to like high school or college and I felt like, oh, wow, everybody is kind of mediocre. Well, I went to like College Works, went to the training. I felt like, okay, there I'm like a little bit behind and there, you know, I'm gonna have to really push myself. And yeah, essentially, like, I didn't know, like, I was going to be like, really like, I was going to be like a high achiever. It wasn't until like April as an intern. I had 130K sold. And I was talking to Sean and Conrad and they asked me if I knew how well I was doing. And I thought I was doing good, but didn't know I was doing like great.
We got to get rid of that. We got to get rid of the leaderboard. The best thing that could ever happen is to not know how good you're doing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what happened was they told me, like, they let me know I was 30K ahead of like anybody else in company history. And that's when it hit me. I'm like, oh, like, you are actually really great. Like, you need to like take this a step further. So I didn't get complacent with it. It motivated me even more that every week I should be putting in as much as I could. And
why do you think some people get complacent? Why do you think we have to avoid looking at numeric history in business, avoid looking at the past because it dampens the future? Why is it that some people, when they're doing the best, they're like, okay, I'm going to slow down a little bit. What is it about? How do you become the person that when you're doing the best, you crush it? You feel the deadly blow to lack of success?
I mean, like for me, I'm just competitive. Like it didn't really matter like the money I was going to make or what was going to come out. I just wanted to be known as like the best. That's what.
Are you back to that? Back to that deadly job of pouring concrete as a young 15-year-old underage laborer. You want to be the best at what you do. You want to be the best at how you write a paper. You want to be the best at how you study in class. You're the best, and you want to just be the best.
See, I was so worried about not being the best that when I made my goal to be 260, I didn't tell Sean and Conrad originally because I was afraid they'd try to like bring me down again. Yeah, talk me down from it. And so I just kept it to myself. It wasn't until like the first day of production that I told Conrad, like, hey, just want to let you know, like these painters know that we're going to go for the record. We're going to do 260.
And so you told the people that were going to motivate you and help you, and you were selective with the others because you were worried they were going to bring you down. You were worried that they were going to create the apathy of, no, you're doing well enough, slowly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's either that they were going to do that or they were going to like try to talk me down from it. I just didn't want people like to stop me. And because, you know, that's how people can be sometimes. You know, like when I wanted to do College Works, you know, my dad was supportive of it. My siblings thought it was really cool because they're all very entrepreneurial. My mom, no, she did not want me doing something like this that was gonna be like hard and challenging. You know, today my fiance's mom, you know, when she found about it, she was not very supportive of me trying to do something like this. So yeah, I like to just keep it to myself sometimes. If I don't think you're going to be like very supportive.
Or if you don't know that they are going to be supportive, it sounds.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like it, I have to get like the trust going with them to like let them know like what my goals are.
Are you enjoying the show thus far? We go through so many resources and links with this podcast, it's tough to keep up. I get it. That's why Matt and the rest of the team put together the Edge of Excellence Bundle. In it, you'll find different tools that relate to overarching themes and topics of the show. Things like DISC assessment tools, time management strategies and tactics, stress and anxiety management tools, exclusive videos and episodes from this podcast that is not released anywhere else, and so much more. The best part? As a valued listener of the show, you can access the Edge of Excellence Bundle 100% for free of charge. That's right, for simply being awesome and tuning in. To get access, all you have to do is go to www.collegeworks.com/podcast and fill out the short form there for us to get the bundle over to you. Once again, it's www.collegeworks.com/podcast. Now, back to the show.
So I guess when you're kind of shooting for the impossible, when you're doing things that haven't been done before, I guess you do have to be selective. And they say that with entrepreneurship, you're going to be told it's not going to work so many times, and you have to ignore that and gravitate towards the people that are supporting you. So you're already doing that as a freshman in college and a sophomore in college, gravitating towards the people that are going to help lift you. And that's part of it, right? It's investing time. It's not spending time. And you still love your mom and you still love your mother-in-law, and I still love my dad, but there were times when I just couldn't tell them this stuff because their fear, and people manage out of fear, right? Their fear of my failure was controlling their input. And I didn't have a fear of failure. I don't care about it. You're the failures of the road to success is paved with little gold bricks. Each one's a failure. And so everybody's worried about your failure, my failure, talking to your dad. You're like, okay, I'm just not going to tell you. I'm going to get going.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes like the people that love you the most, they just don't want to see you get hurt, or they don't want to see you like in pain, or, you know, even though it's not really like painful, but they just don't want to see you have to like work or stuff like that.
Yeah. And you can get B's without trying that hard. You can make a good living without taking that risk. Let's just take the safe route so I know Corey and Matt are okay. Swinging for the fences, you might hit it. You know, chances are pretty low. And you could also end up smoldering in flames. Let's just avoid that and go with the safe.
Yeah, no, that's exactly how they feel. And I didn't want people like trying to talk me off of it. So
you're moving through, you're crushing it. And, you know, when you're looking back at crushing it and, you know, in your internship, whether it's college works or something else, what were the lessons that you got? One, select to you who you bring into your sphere, select who's going to support you. What are other lessons?
Oh, man. Oh, where do I start? You want like big picture or daily management lessons?
Sure. What do you remember?
I mean, like from like the big picture, my look back at it, you know, like I was always like worried about like what if things don't go right, like, you know, what if X, Y, and Z happens. And I really realized, like, you know, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. So as long as you just keep working, moving forward, and like don't stop, because like if your plan doesn't go as planned, it's okay. Just make a new one and execute that one. You know, like I'd always be worried about like, what if all my painters quit? What am I going to do? And it happened. There was like a day where it happened multiple times where I lost like key guys that were part of my crews. One guy tried to create a union of painters against me and had to basically like let him go and restart with that crew. And you know what? It was actually the best thing that ever happened. You don't really know like when the good days are, when the bad days are, because what happened was I hired a new crew and they were so much easier to work with. My life got way easier.
And the best opportunities are often masked as a nightmare.
Yeah.
And the best lessons are often masked. When I think back to my manager year, for some reason, I don't remember the good stuff. I do remember Gunner and his Mercedes Benz. He had like the big Mercedes, the most expensive Mercedes sedan you could have as a paint mark. And I do remember he got a lot of dates from the clients. So I guess that was good for him. But I remember like house I screwed up, horrible customer. I shouldn't say that because he goes right, except for Dick Green. And his name was Dick Green. That was his name. Man, he was one. And like, I remember screwing up on this or that. I don't remember all the wonderful stuff. And I mean, it's just, those are my lessons, right? I learned about customer service. I learned about perseverance. When I think about my business career, you know, the thing that pops in my mind first is when I lost everything and how I learned to live in the future and mentally move and change my paradigm. And it was like a horrible, horrible experience, but the end result was amazing. So, you know, the worst thing that can happen, and by the way, as you're talking, I'm thinking, God, I don't like to worry about hypotheticals, but I do. So I'm not going to worry about what ifs, but I'm going to plan for what ifs. So you probably had a plan for what if, and when the worry goes, like, I'm not going to worry about this. I'm ready for it. Boom. So you've got to look forward and plan for the worst case scenario and then go back to optimism. You got to plan for the worst, but expect the best. So you learn that, you learn don't stop. If your plan doesn't work, make another. You learn to select supportive input. Anything else you were learning that record-breaking manager year?
I think that's pretty much it. I mean, those are like the big takeaways. Because like you can always, you know, if you make a mistake, you can always like move forward, fix it. Or if something bad happens, you know, usually you can just go forward and, you know, hire a new crew and you can restart, like you can 180 the next day.
Yeah. So when this, I don't know what episode number you are, but I know it's going to be in a few months. So, and you know, they're interns, there's lots of people that listen to this, but some of them do work at College Works. And so what tip, and if you're not working at College Works and you're driving on the freeway, you just listen to this because you like the exposure, Think like Corey thinks. What's the opportunity? What can you learn? Look for mentors. Look for lessons. So what quick tips do you have? I think they're probably going to be starting production in production by the time this comes out. By the way, if you're listening right now, we don't know what's happened in politics. We don't know if the winter in Kansas State is cold as it has been for the last week. We don't know what's going on with the funding of the two wars that we definitely should be funding. So now some of that's been sorted out. What tips do you have for these people that haven't even gotten training yet that will probably have been in it for like 10, 12 weeks by the time?
So I guess like the people that are like haven't gotten the training yet, you know, just like trust the process, you know, just trust your gut, your ability to move forward. Cause like, you know, nothing's going to go perfectly.
How do you apply that to your cattle business? How do you apply that to your real estate business? Trust the process. Nothing's going to go perfectly. How do you apply that to it?
Well, like for example, like, you know, I do my research, and I look at what could happen, what could go wrong. And then what do people do when those things do happen?
So you do the same thing. You plan for the worst. You get, and you do it when you're a sound mind and body. It's stress testing is what it's called. You figure out what could go wrong. What would I do? What could go wrong? And if that happens, what would I do? And if that happens, what would I do? And you plan it out. So when the stress hits and the shit's hitting the fan, oop, I already got a plan for this.
Yeah.
So you're doing that in the cattle business. I mean, I don't want to jinx you, but there's like diseases there, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's happened. I mean, there's been a year, the first year I ran cattle, I lost money. You know, just poor planning, didn't know what to expect. Didn't know what I was buying. And from there, you just have to like learn like how to, like, you just learn from your mistakes and move forward. Then you realize like, you know, those types of mistakes are just the greatest lessons. You know, you could pay thousands of dollars, but those, like, if you don't repeat them again, you're golden. So, I mean, like, I like to do as much research as I can.
When you're making mistakes, you're making mistakes on a sales call. You're making, and Brett was just talking about this in the last recording. You know, you got to look at what can I do differently? You mentioned it too. What do I own? So you make a mistake, you don't fester, you don't get upset at yourself, you don't punch the wall. You're stopping and going, okay, what's the lesson here? How can I prevent it the next time? What, and maybe you're even documenting, what's the lesson? How can I prevent it the next time? And if I do prevent it the next time, what's the path that I could go down? And how do I learn from those mistakes? And how do I prevent those mistakes? Are you consciously doing that or?
Yeah, no, I'm consciously doing it. And I'm also like consciously like reaching out and asking like other people for advice that have done it before, right? Always, like I make a mistake.
Always looking for that concrete, the next concrete guy. Give you that.
Yeah. Lesson. Well, yeah. I remember like, you know, college works. I made a mistake like one weekend. Yeah. The first weekend we went out, you know, DM did a lot of sales for me. We sold a lot of work. First weekend on my own, I think I booked one job out of eight, you know, terrible weekend.
Wow. I went 26.
I know. It was so bad. But I remember,
I went
like
26. You booked one out of eight. Wow.
Well, I'm not a slow learner like you were. Oh, but no. So I took note of that weekend. I remember just coming into my meeting with Conrad, and I'm like, Conrad, like, what did I do? Like, what am I doing wrong? Like, it's like, it's me. What did I do wrong? He's like, wow, that mindset right there. You already got it figured out. Because like now you're going to get better at this.
And in the age of victims, you weren't a victim. By the way, we didn't used to have this victim mentality back in the day. That's new in the last 7 years. And you see people, what it made you wrong? This wasn't my fault. They don't say that. What did they do wrong? Why did this happen to me? And you're taking ownership from the start. What did I do wrong? And Conrad recognizes once you take ownership, you're 90% on the way to the solution. Once you figure out that you have the power in everything, if your girlfriend's mad at you and you're fighting, what can you do about it? You're having issues with your boss. Even if they're the worst ever, what can you do about it? So come in and you have this, I guess not an epiphany, because that's how you've been all your life since you were 13 years old.
Yeah, no, that came like a lot from like wrestling. Like I learned those lessons from wrestling because like you start like at the beginning of my wrestling career when I was a kid, I didn't really take it that serious. And yeah, you know, I would never like learn from the mistakes. But I can't remember who it was, but they told me that like, well, you got to look at yourself. Like you can't blame the opponent. Can't blame the ref. You know, I think it was Coach Rawl. Like somebody was complaining about how they lost because the ref kind of cheated them. And it was a questionable call, but the way our coach phrases, I don't care how the ref calls it. You got to be beating the guy so bad that it wasn't even questionable. Like there was no chances that you were going to lose.
And that's life right there. You've got to get ready and plan for contingencies and work so hard that if you get sick, you're still going to succeed. That if there's a COVID outbreak, you're still going to succeed. That if the dam breaks and the city's flooded, I used to say that if a plane hits my house, I'm going to wonder why I didn't move yesterday. I'm not going to blame the pilot, because that's how you have to live if you're going to be excellent. Take ownership, plan, figure out what you could do. It's the ownership, right? That's the excitement about being an entrepreneur. It's ownership, and it's all on you. And even though you may have thousands of people in the company that you're running, and every one of them has a little piece of input, it's you. Did you train that frontline worker? Did you teach you? Did you teach the quality? Did you teach the safety? You got ownership. Every time there's a problem, okay, what could I have done? And it's just so empowering, right? And you've learned that super early in life.
Yeah, and you're like way more free when you do that. I remember like another time where I had that ownership feel was, I remember like, you know, my parents when I was younger used to pay for stuff. And then one thing I don't like is when somebody pays for something for me and then turns around and like uses that against me. Like, hey, I did this for you. You need to do X, Y, and Z. You know, like I hear that a lot when people say like, yeah, my parents paid for my college tuition. I can't do this because my parents do this for me. And they're almost like kind of like became like a slave to like other people from like this, like kind of like a guilt slave. And I remember like when I had that feeling for the first time. And from there, from that point forward, I decided like, I'm just going to cut myself off and just make sure to take care of my own end.
Well, you cut yourself off from your parents?
Yeah. I mean, like my parents wanted to buy me a car before I go to college and I just wouldn't let them.
Can you call my kids and discuss with them freedom by cutting themselves off? I love that. I love that for my personal freedom. I didn't know you did that. So they were going to pay. They were going to buy you a car. You said no. You might not want to go see Dr. Dorothy about that, because that's a little strange. Could you see this as an opportunity to take the car and continue and crush it? Or no, you just needed that. You needed to have all the say.
I just need to have all the say. Like at the end of the day, I can do what I want to do. And yeah, I mean, they offered to pay for the car. They didn't offer to pay for the college, but like, you know, I was talking about like how other people, like they have that same issue. They get like guilted into doing things. I'm like, I just don't want to like live that lifestyle. Like that's like the quickest way to get me to not like want to work with you is if you ever try guilting me.
So you made a decision that it's easier to take the hard way than the easy way.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of what I can do.
It's kind of like, because I know like you're going to have, I also want to live a life where I'm like disappointed that I didn't do what I like wanted to do.
So you got a lot of future thinking. Are you surprised at where you're at now? When you were 13 or 14 buying cattle and 17 buying land and doing these all states and all whatevers, did you always know you kind of be where you're at? Or, I mean, and we don't want to get into, but you've invested quite a bit of money. You have properties, you have homes, you've got a lot of cash stuck in a checking account for some reason. That, by the way, this should come out after you're married. Let me try that again. Take out that this will come out after you're married. So did you know you kind of would be here, or are you surprised at where you're at? What's different than you expect?
Yeah, I did not know I'd be here. I had the aspirations. I didn't, you know, I kind of thought I was going to end up living like a mediocre life, because like my goal after college was to become like a loan officer. But I wanted to be a loan officer just so I can keep investing.
Never heard of anybody that wants to be a loan officer. They just become one.
Yeah. Well, it was a loan officer, so that way I had free time to do what? Other things? Right? That's what I saw. Because like the loan officers I worked with, I didn't realize the best part of their job was talking to me, or like talking to people like me. because I would go in, you know, like I remember I had an OJT on the job training class, and I would abuse the OJT to go talk to like my loan officer sometimes. And I would sit down with them for 2 hours at a time. And I thought, well, that's a pretty cool job. I actually would love to do stuff like that. Get off early, go do my own thing afterwards. And then I realized like, that's a pretty, I don't think I'd really like that job very much because the rest of it.
How do you have a loan officer? How do you borrow money when you're not 18? Can't enter into a contract.
My older brother would always have to co-sign.
Okay.
But like, they were using my equity.
Yeah. They'll use the equity. They'll take your money. They just legally can't. So your older brother was co-signing. Okay. Yeah. So you're on the edge. You knew you're on the edge. You knew you're heading there, but you're still a little surprised.
Yeah. No, I did not ever expect like doing really well at CollegeWorks. You know, I thought like the way I looked at it, my goal originally when I did this internship was to do 70K, you know, make $12,000. That'd get me by another year. And to be honest, like when it just started, I was just going to put my best foot forward. It didn't really matter. Like I thought the amount of work I was going to put into it was only going to yield me like $12,000 in pay. Like I was surprised the reward I got for it. And like the opportunities it opened afterwards.
Yeah.
So
now how old are you, by the way? I forget.
23
years old.
Yeah.
23 years old. So 23 years old, you got a $10 million a year business. You got, I don't even know how many acres of land for your cattle. You got a few hundred. You got, how many heads of cattle do you have?
50.
Oh, you have 50. We'll be selling.
Yeah.
You know, like that. 50 heads of cattle. You got all this stuff. So you thought you were going to do well, but come on. So, what was the biggest obstacle along the way, and how'd you get through it?
Good question. You know, because sometimes I feel like the biggest obstacle is like just me. Like, you know, there's like problems, but it's just making sure I'm going to take care of them.
I knew you were going to say that. That's the attitude of a winner. That's it. There are no obstacles but you, right? There's opportunities.
I didn't realize this whole podcast was going to hit the same theme over and over again, but that's just the way I've always looked at issues. It's like, okay, like this is just something I need to take care of, or this is me.
Well, it does. The whole podcast hasn't been the same thing. There's lots of great stuff in here that you talked about, but every podcast is different and everybody has a theme.
Yeah.
Francisco's the paradigm shift. Nicole is the, or Cato's the sum of your five closest friends. You are the sum of your five closest friends. You are this ownership thing. And that's got you where you are today. So what's the biggest sacrifice that you made back in the day? A lot of them where you were thinking, oh my God, why can't I do this other thing? I'm going to make a sacrifice. And you look back and you're like, thank God I made that.
Well, they're like along the way, there'd be times where, you know, people wanted me like go out at like random times that didn't really make sense or unplanned, or, you know, maybe there'd be like a vacation that didn't really like make sense to go on. And, you know, really the sacrifices, you just got to like, you know, just plan for it. You can still do all the things you want to do, You just got to make sure it makes sense, like in a timely fashion.
And you can do all the things you want to do that make sense.
Yeah.
You can't go on every vacation, watch every football game, go to every single party, and be successful like Corey. You have to pick and choose the ones that make sense. You have a decision filter. So you chose not to do certain things that weren't going to get. And you go out and party. You go out and have drinks. You go to events, but you're doing it with people that you want to be with. And you're not going to go to the one where you don't want to be with the people. You're doing it with experiences you can grow from. You're picking the ones that make sense.
Yeah. Like, I don't have like a fear of like missing out. You know, I know I'm going to have fun when I want to have fun and like when I need to, and with the people I actually like to go out with, you know, versus just showing up at some random party with people I don't really know, probably don't like, don't want to be around at a time that's not very convenient for me.
People that aren't lifting you up, they're dragging you down.
They're going to complain about, you know, like,
but you're investing. You're investing. Time is an investment. You're investing your time in people. You're investing your time in experiences. You're not spending it. That's what you do. You invest. You didn't spend your 80 grand. You didn't spend your 100 grand. You didn't spend your whatever other money. You invest it. You don't spend your time. You invest. You don't do things. You invest in experience.
Yeah. No, like the time I spend, I spend time with are the people I want to be around and like that are going to like, you know, help lift them up. Or, you know, I like investing my time into other people too, just for them. But like, they gotta make sure like it's gonna be like helpful for them, or they're gonna actually use my time well.
Yeah. All right. Well, Corey, I really appreciate you breaking away from shoveling snow and dealing with floods in the house, and probably eating corn dogs. That's what I'm. And coming on the Edge of Excellence. It's been a great show. Thank you so much for making time.
Thanks for having me on, Matt.
I hope you enjoyed that episode today on the Edge of Excellence podcast. Make sure to hit subscribe on whichever platform you're listening to this. If this episode made you think of someone, go ahead, take a screenshot and share this exact episode with them. This show exists to showcase what is possible when young leaders are willing to step out of their comfort zone and choose to excel in their lives. To learn more about our internship for young and ambitious students, www.oneinternship.com/podcast to see if it's something that makes sense for you. Once again, it is www.oneinternship.com/podcast. Let this be a reminder for you to live on the edge of excellence in your business and life. See you next time.